people started running, and then shots came out of nowhere.
They found the shooter on the 32nd floor of Mandalay Bay.
I am anxious.
I feel somewhat hopeless.
A gunman opened fire during services at the First Baptist Church there.
The scene looked terrible. Everybody was bleeding, crying. There was dead bodies everywhere. I mean, babies. There was bullets everywhere.
At this point, I'm rather disgusted and tired.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Call it bad news fatigue or disaster fatigue. It's a very real thing in today's 24/7 news cycle. From mass shootings to natural disasters to divisive politics, excessive news coverage can trigger depression and anxiety. Here to discuss bad news fatigue and how to deal with it, our University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Professor of Psychiatry and Director of the UC Health Stress Center, Dr. Kate Chard, and Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Pediatrics and Director of the Anxiety Disorders Research Program, Dr. Jeffrey Strawn. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Dr. Chard and Dr. Strawn, thank you for being here today. Good to see both of you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
How common is this, whether you call it bad news fatigue or you call it disaster fatigue, how common is it in today's society, Dr. Chard?
Well, it's becoming more and more common, we find. Not only do people have access on the news stations, on their television, but now with these electronic devices we have, it's hard to miss. You know, even if you want to just go check the weather, often there's a little bit of that blurb, that advertisement for that story. And so people are getting very, very tired of hearing about it.
Yeah. And Dr. Strawn, does this have an impact on kids as well as adults?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I think we've recognized for a long time is that often the child's reaction is very dependent on how the parent reacts to the news and to the information barrage.
Yeah. What does this do to your mental state? How does it affect you mentally?
Well, I'll start with adults and then maybe we could switch to children. But I think for a lot of parents, they start to wonder if there's a hopelessness of what's the point. And for anybody who already maybe feels anxious about something in their life or depressed about something in their life, this just further confirms, why try? Why should I worry about being able to protect myself? Obviously, I can't. I already thought my kids might be unsafe away from me. Now this further proves they're going to be unsafe for me, away from me. And so I think for a lot of people, this maybe really heightens the disorder they already have and makes it hard for them to feel safe leaving their home, going to work, going to enjoy popular events.
And so you can become depressed, you can become anxious from this?
Absolutely. And it can also make things like that worse. So maybe you just were a little bit anxious. And if you already were a little scared about going to a large sporting event, as some people are, you know, think about after you hear about a large bombing or a shooting, you're not going to want to go at all anymore.
Well, and it makes me wonder about, you hear about, it might not be a mass shooting, but you hear about shootings constantly in the local news and you learn about them practically every day. And I always wonder, can that make people start to feel paranoid about going out in public?
Certainly. I know of parents who have actually pulled their children out of school because of their fear that the children might be hurt or injured in the school. And I do know people who have deliberately changed their social plans. Interestingly, I think when we find that there's been an event at a place, people will change their travel plans or their vacation plans thinking, oh, it happened there, I better not go there, instead of acknowledging
Absolutely.
If it can happen there,
right.
It can happen anywhere, right?
Yeah. Dr. Strawn, what about the impact on children from a mental standpoint?
And I think for children and adolescents, it really parallels a lot of the reactions that Dr. Shar just described. Although I think one of the things that's particularly important with children and adolescents, as I alluded to earlier, is that often things are filtered through the parents in terms of if the parent is particularly anxious about an event or about uncertainty or other things. Often those effects are amplified in the child or adolescent. The other thing is that for some individuals who maybe already have some anxiety or depression, there tends to be differences in terms of the way that they experience the world or in terms of the way that they think about things. So they may tend to be more likely to see a threat in something that is more innocuous. And certainly that's something that resonates with all of the things going on right now, the barrage of the news about trauma and disasters and shootings and so forth.
So is it possible some people are hardened to this, that some people are more sensitive to this than others, Dr. Chard?
I think it's absolutely both of those. There are people who really just get tired and don't pay attention and numb out a little bit. And there are some people, I think, that it becomes so overwhelming for them. You see people now saying on things like Facebook or Twitter, I'm going to take a timeout. And people will say, I'm logging off or I'm going to check out for a while. Mm-hmm. And I think that's them taking their own mental health break of realizing, you know what, I'm going to become hardened if I don't move away from this for a little while.
Yeah, for some people who get anxious watching news, do they create a cycle for themselves in that respect?
Absolutely. So they maybe are worried about something and they go to the news for confirmation or for reassurance. And then a new news story has come up with this new stressful event. And then that makes them more anxious because it confirms whatever fear they already had. And so at times I literally will say to my patients, I need you to not watch the news and to stay off your device.
And to that end, one of the things that we were talking about before the show started is just the way in which stories are connected, particularly if one's using the internet as their source of news. And so it becomes very difficult to turn off that news as you're linked from one story to the next, to the next, to the next, versus, say, 30, 40 years ago, where the information source was primarily a paper or a news story that had a fairly finite end.
Is there some level of addiction involved in some of this? You just can't get it, you can't turn it off, you can't stop watching?
Well, we do know all of us do have, I think that we call it the rubberneck syndrome, right, where we mm-hmm. turn and we look at an accident mm-hmm. when it goes by. And for a lot of us, it's if we know the information, we can control and predict what will happen to ourselves. And so the addiction becomes more that need to have control. As long as I know where the danger is, as long as I know what the threat is, I can make sure it won't happen to me. And so for some people, right, gun sales go up after these events because they think, now that I know what happened, I need to own a weapon in order to protect myself. Or if it's a drunk driver on a certain road, I need to not drive on that road. And so for a lot of people, addiction may be a little bit of a strong word, but it's definitely a need to feel like I can control and protect myself and everyone I love and care about.
What about the physical aspects of this? I mean, does this also have a physical aspect on people? Can it raise your blood pressure, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. And so what I think we've learned over the last maybe 40, 50 years is that the stress response by the body is fairly consistent across trauma, across stressful experiences, et cetera. So we know that both in terms of the brain structures that are involved and in terms of the things that happen in the rest of the body in terms of releasing stress hormones like cortisol, epinephrine, and so forth, those tend to be there regardless of the type of trauma. And we also know that when those systems are turned on for a prolonged period of time, there are lots of other health sequelae beyond the mental health things that we traditionally think about in terms of increasing obesity, insulin resistance, in terms of high blood pressure, sleep disruption, alterations in metabolism, et cetera.
So let's take a real life example. Let's say you're driving a car down the road. You hear a piece of news. Maybe it's a political story that infuriates you, or maybe it's just a piece of news that disturbs you greatly. Does that mean you actually tense up to the point as you're driving that it can affect how you drive the car?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've seen this happen
Certainly.
Repeatedly, which people will say, I got so upset hearing something. And it can be your wife telling you a piece of bad news. It could be hearing the news on the radio. I see people checking their phones when they drive, and which scares me because what if they read something that was really mm-hmm. disturbing? And all of those changes that Jeff just highlighted, Dr. Strawn highlighted, can happen in the body in real time. And absolutely. If you are that anxious or distressed, it will change your ability to do anything, even to work. So think about, you know, factories where they play news stories. I mean, that's not the environment.
Or maybe CNN's on a TV someplace yeah. or something like that. Yeah,
I think we
right.
need to be careful about where we have real-time news when people are actually having to do important labor that might be impaired by that.
How much is the news industry to blame for this? Almost any major disaster that happens anywhere, you see each local news outlet trying to find a local tie to that particular story. How much is the news industry contributing to this whole thing?
Well, I wouldn't want to blame the news industry because the job of the news industry is to bring the news to us. And it's our choice to take that in. And so I don't want to feel like I've got someone else deciding what I get to read or what I get to hear, right? So I think it's more important that we just educate the consumer. And maybe that's the job of the news, much like we're doing here, is to educate the consumer, not to be a kind of 24-hour consumer, you know, where we're processing eternally, and that part of your job as the consumer is to know when to say when.
Mm-hmm. So you give yourself a break every now and then. That's
absolutely
the important thing.
Absolutely.
Right? Can the device itself, can that affect how you get your news? Say you get it from a smartphone or a tablet or a PC. Can that device itself have an effect on your mood as well as the news that you're taking in through it?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things that's important as we look at some of these electronic devices is that there's an interactive component to them. And so that tends to increase the engagement of the person who's reading as opposed to an individual who's maybe more in a passive role as they're just listening to the news or as they're maybe watching something on TV or reading something in printed media. And I think, you know, the other piece is that there's often a multi-sensory component in terms of you're seeing images as well as audio and so forth versus a situation where you maybe just are reading something.
Is this – am I correct in saying this is – is this like burnout? That's what it seems like to me, that there's some degree of burnout involved in this. Is that the case?
Right. I think absolutely. Some people do just get burned out. And I think we were talking earlier, this all started for me with 9/11, when we had 24-hour news coverage of what was happening in those buildings, not just on CNN, but also on all of the major networks. And so if you turned on the TV and that was your natural mm-hmm. habit in your home was to have it on with dinner and everything else, you literally could not escape the videos of these things happening over and then the stories of the husbands and wives and parents trying to find their loved ones. And so it was just this kind of 24-hour sensory overload. And I think people did get burned out. And those that didn't became very anxious and depressed.
And you brought up something interesting there. If you're watching the news when you're eating dinner, that doesn't sound like a good combination.
Or how about going right before bed? Mm-hmm. Right? Right? So times when we want you to either be talking with your family and connecting with others or times when we want you to be unplugging, processing your day, those are two times that I typically advise my clients, let's turn off that TV, not have it in the bedroom at all, not have that iPhone next to your, you know, bed, and then also at the dinner table.
Yeah. And how, if you are watching the news, what, about 2 hours before you go to bed? Is that, what how long would you tell people to give themselves?
You know, we usually like people to take about an hour before they go to bed to totally unplug. All devices go away. The TV's off. The iPhone's put away. If you want to connect with something, a good book, talking to mm-hmm. a friend, listening to music, something like that, that'll allow you to kind of, you know, recharge your batteries a little bit.
We will continue our conversation about dealing with bad news fatigue, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
Well, that's because he'd rather have a puppet as president of
no
the United
puppet.
States.
No puppet.
And it's pretty clear.
You're the puppet.
It's pretty clear.
I mean, Donald Trump is a flawed person. Hillary's flawed. I'm flawed.
I'm not going to give you a question.
Can you stay categorical?
You are fake news.
This is fake news put out by the media.
This article is a prime example of fake news.
It's been a tremendous struggle. I've lost sleep about it. I've shed tears over it. I take democracy extremely seriously.
There's been many things about this election that have been distasteful.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and here to discuss bad news fatigue are University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Professor of Psychiatry and Director of the UC Health Stress Center, Dr. Kate Chard, and Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Pediatrics and Director of the Anxiety Disorders Research Program, Dr. Jeffrey Strawn. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And if I remember this right, there was a therapist, I believe he is on the West Coast, maybe in Seattle is what comes to mind, who gave this the term, that cut we just heard, he gave it the term election stress disorder. So is that something real? I mean, I guess a lot of people are feeling this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it would meet criteria for a disorder like we think of depression or anxiety, but I think it was his way of saying that people are getting really stressed by the election and they're really bothered. And I think the key piece to that, as I've thought a lot about it, is that a lot of people think there's a lot riding on these elections, right? This is going to affect my taxes. It's going to affect my mortgage interest rate or my way of life. And so I think it's really important that folks find out the real facts about what could happen if someone is elected. I remember someone saying to me with the prior presidential election, but if someone's elected, they're going to tattoo me and everyone's going to have an implant that tracks me. And so I thought, but let's look at the evidence for that. How real is it that you're actually going to have an implanted, you know, Big Brother device put in your arm if someone is or is not elected? And I think part of it is having more discussions about the fears that people have surrounding things like elections.
Mm-hmm. And I think to follow up on something Dr. Shard said, you know, while emotional reactions to these types of events are fairly common and really universal, I think labeling it as a disorder is potentially problematic because a disorder is something that really fundamentally impacts function. And I don't know that we necessarily see that with the typical emotional reaction to this type of news that we're talking about.
Agreed.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Does the stress over elections and the stress over the news, can that affect a person's relationships?
Absolutely. If you're more focused on the election and you're staying attuned only to the TV and to your device and you're not connecting with your partner, obviously that's going to be difficult. But also, if you're just running at kind of that, as Jeff was talking about, Dr. Strong, that higher amped up anxiety state, we know that people who are in that anxious kind of state are going to be more reactive. They're going to be more prone to be biting other people's heads off, to be snappish. They're going to be less open to feedback or even constructive criticism. And so connecting with them becomes more difficult.
Again, 513-419-7100. Let's talk to Donovan. Hi, Donovan.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
I just wanted to comment that it seems like that you guys touched earlier on how the parents obviously influence how kids can feel. But one thing that hasn't been talked about are people that live in more sheltered existence, possibly in rural areas, possibly people that have a lot of money and live in a bubble, being afraid of, let's say, downtown or something like that where they're not used to going. And let's just bring it all the way up to the top. I mean, everything you guys are talking about could completely be related to Donald Trump. I mean, this guy watches TV all the time. He's completely paranoid. And the people that voted for him are either sheltered or in a bubble. Not 100%, but I think it's easy to say that. I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay, Donovan, thank you.
I think Donovan touches on something really important, which is the realm of our normal experience, right? So for an individual who has a very diverse experience, who comes downtown, who goes lots of different places, travels, they're going to have a different level of comfort in terms of having had more positive experiences in more settings. And that's going to be generally more protective for that individual as opposed to some individuals who maybe have more restricted activities or who maybe live apart from other things and don't have that exposure and eo ipso those positive experiences.
Interesting word, though, isolation. If you're isolated, if you're, for whatever reason, be it geographically or because of different circumstances, does that isolation make it more make you more prone to this kind of thing?
Absolutely, because we find often that people who are isolated in one way are often isolated in others. And so when you become geographically isolated, then all of a sudden you have less friends maybe that you have time to spend with because it's longer to drive to them. And then other things become, I think, more controlled in terms of limited access. So I've got people who say, I only watch one TV station. I only listen to one radio station. I only drive one way to work and I never go anywhere else. I've never been outside of the state of Kentucky. I'm never going to go to Ohio. I'm never going to go to Europe. I mean, those kind of limiting factors, as Dr. Strong was alluding to, really cause them to have a harder time when that change element is put in front of them.
So how do you cope with bad news fatigue? I mean, what are some good coping strategies? We've talked about some things along the way here, like reducing the amount of news you expose yourself to, taking breaks. But what are some other things that you can do?
Well, I think being aware is number one. Notice if you're tending to get upset. If you find that you're yelling back at the TV, if you're wanting to make comments on your iPhone that are raising that blood pressure a little bit, if you're no longer spending time doing things that you used to enjoy, your hobbies, spending time with family and friends, then I think it's definitely time for you to step away. And I don't mean just put it in your back pocket. Let's actually get away from that device, that TV, for a little while. And then being aware when it's gotten worse than that, when it's actually now changing your behaviors. Are you actually not doing or spending time with or connecting with people you used to enjoy? And I think most importantly for me, if you're starting to now need to manage that stress, if getting on your iPhone makes you want to grab a beer, then now we've got a problem, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. So what about positive thinking? Do you think that focusing on what's good in life and keeping your thoughts positive, does that help you offset all the negativity that's coming at you?
Most definitely. We actually have a lot of research on that thinking positively does make a difference. And often finding other sources of information that might counteract what you were looking at. So I think people do these wonderful things of, let's focus only on puppy pictures. Well, that might sound trite, but there's something to that. Actually, spending time with animals does lower your blood pressure. It does decrease anxiety. But I love the fact that the news often says we're going to balance that kind of negative story with that feel-good story for the day. And people do need to kind of focus on what is working in their lives, what's working in the world, what is good about my environment. Because those are the kinds of things that are going to reset you and reset that balance.
513-419-7100. Benjamin joins us now. Hi, Benjamin.
Hi there. First time I've called your show. I'm listening to the topic, and I'm wondering if people's response with stress isn't a kind of adaptation to just the way the world has changed. I feel like maybe the problem is people are too positive and optimistic about things generally, and maybe they should be a little bit more worried.
I think there's definitely a balance in terms of what you're getting at. I don't know that it would necessarily be advantageous to live in a constant state of hypervigilance, given what seems like a lot of negative news, a lot of negative events, more frequent terrorist attacks and so forth. But at the same time, I think going back to something Dr. Shard was saying earlier, it is really important to balance that with other things going on. So while there's a need to maintain some vigilance, I think we need to be very careful about assuming that this is a new normal or that this should be a new normal and that some hypervigilance is required to function now.
And I love what you're saying there, because I think one of the things we often work with our patients on is, let's actually look at the numbers, because people will say, if I go somewhere, a bad thing will happen. But if we look at the real base rates of something like this happening to you, to your family tomorrow in your town, it's actually much more likely that still that you're going to be hit by a car coming down the street accidentally than many of these things that I think a lot of people are worrying about.
Sean joins us. Hi, Sean. Go right ahead.
Hey, just a quick one for you. What do we think is the long-term impact of this? Because if I think of where we were 10 years ago, God, the world's changed. What's going to happen as a result in 20 years from now?
Well, we do know that long-term stress is really bad for you. I think you heard from Dr. Strawn what some of the short-term even can be with just the high blood pressure and some of the metabolic and the obesity. The sad fact is that somebody becomes so distressed and depressed or anxious, and it actually turns into a legitimate disorder, this has severe medical implications for us. And so we have people who have shorter lifespans. We have people who are more likely to commit suicide, more likely to develop an addiction. But even just heart disease, cystitis, colitis, stroke, all of these things increase the longer someone stays overly anxious or depressed. And so when I think about the long-term implications of any of the stress disorders, it always scares me, because it's such a bad outcome for individuals. So I would say that, again, low-level stress is one thing, but if you find that it's interfering with your functioning, it's definitely time to seek help.
And I think also, even on a more milder scale, when we think about just the changes in our thinking that occur as a result of this exposure, we know that many of these individuals may tend to develop what we call threat bias, wherein they're seeing generally innocuous situations or events as being potentially dangerous. And I think that's something that we need to be very careful about and very aware of, even though that's something that might not necessarily reach the level of needing to come to a therapist or to a psychiatrist.
How do you, if you have a family member that you think might be going through stress from news fatigue, bad news fatigue, what are some things you can do to help that family member?
Well, I think talking to them about it, and of course that doesn't always work because a lot of times our family members will shrug us off of, oh, you're just being a worrywart, right? So maybe diverting them. Sometimes it can be helpful to actually find something that's positive to, you know, how about game night? Can we actually try to do something that would take them totally away from that device? So I do know of a lot of families that are trying to engage in more of those kind of family-oriented activities where it makes it really hard to pick up that device. Or actually, let's get out and go to a movie instead of sitting at home where you can be checking your phone throughout the television program and really kind of forcefully in a sense, but through a positive environment, getting away from it.
Right. I think also as we're talking to them, not just saying that we're worried, but telling them why we're potentially concerned or what we're thinking when we're with someone else.
So is there are there filters that you can get to help you with this? Because I know it can be tough for some people to turn off the news. So I'm wondering if there are devices, apps, filters, things that you can get that can help keep you away from this.
There actually are fantastic apps that can do this. And a lot of people have found these as parents because they want to filter the iPhone for their kids. And what I found with some of my patients is that we can actually use those child-focused apps and allow them to filter for an adult because you get to choose kind of where do I want that lens to be. And you know what? You can always turn it back on anytime you want. And it just changes it. You even in some of the apps that people have like Twitter and Facebook and other things, you can put filters in those as well. And so I think reminding people that you have that option within your own phone to change, it's helpful.
Is just reading a good old-fashioned newspaper a good way to control your news consumption too?
Certainly. And I think the other thing that sometimes is nice about that is that you're only getting that in one sensory modality. It's just visual. So you're not necessarily being linked to a video. You're not necessarily seeing moving pictures, etc.
513-419-7100. And Isabel joins us. Hi, Isabel.
Hi, how are you this
Good,
today?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good.
Go right ahead.
I wanted to make a comment. I'm actually from quite a small town in western Kentucky, a town of about 5,500. And moving here to the metro Cincinnati area, I was very surprised at how close-minded many people were who lived here. Because we lived in a small town, we weren't really actually as sheltered as I think a lot of people believe us to be, or uneducated as most people believe us to be. We were actually in the majority, people who traveled and went to big cities and visited. We went out of our way to go to these cities to see the museums and to participate in life. And moving here, I was so surprised. So I think that idea that people here, going downtown, feeling like they can either go downtown and that gives them a whole different range of experiences is one thing, but knowing the world entire is a whole different way of looking at things than just being downtown. And I feel like, I feel very safe wherever I go. I've been going downtown for probably 15 years and didn't ever have a problem. My daughter dances with the ballet. We're down there all the time. We communicate and deal with people of all different backgrounds, and I don't feel fear about any of that.
It sounds like you're not suffering from bad news fatigue, Isabel.
No. The bad news fatigue is that I try to block it out of my life. But I think that there is a lot of fear, and I find more people being scared of going downtown who really are from this area to begin with. And, that's what I had an issue with, was, just that idea that,
okay,
that there are people who are from here who, even if they go downtown, they may think that they're open-minded, or they may think different things, but they may not actually have experienced
Dr. Chardot,
points of view.
Yeah, Dr. Chardot.
Absolutely. You're raising such a wonderful point. And absolutely, there's no implication that someone in a rural area has to be more limited. In fact, I know of people who live in large cities like New York City who have about a 6-block radius that they'll go in, and mm-hmm. that's it. And they'll never leave that area and their friends and their stores and things like that. So absolutely, I think you're being in a very small environment can happen in the largest of cities or in a rural location. And you raise such a great point. It's important to push that boundary, even if it's not moving into a new area. It can be watching a different television show. It can be traveling. You can do it in all sorts of ways. What a lovely sentiment.
Can you balance a desire to stay informed with keeping your sanity at the same time?
I think absolutely. I think the important kind of theme that we've talked about today is modulating exposure and maintaining control in terms of what you are exposed to or what you allow yourself to be exposed to.
Is moderation a good word?
Always.
In this?
Great word.
Always. Well, Dr. Chard and Dr. Strawn, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
You.
University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, Professor of Psychiatry and Director of the UC Health Stress Center, Dr. Kate Chard, and Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Pediatrics and Director of the Anxiety Disorders Research Program, Dr. Jeffrey Strawn.